Accession number 27074, Reel 5.
Squadron Leader Bamberger, Reel 5. You were telling me off the tape then that you did a triangular flight at night using just instruments. Could you explain about that?
Well, though we'd done instrument flying under what you call a hood in daylight, during my night flying instruction, we did night flying landings instruction, then we did night flying landings solo, but one of the exercises, which of course this was with an instructor, was to fly at night under the hood just on instruments. And I see I was doing it for 50 minutes, according to my logbook.
How difficult was that process by that stage? Because obviously you'd done some training by that point, but that must have been a very difficult thing to do.
Well, I suppose at that stage, you remember the war was on, and we knew the war was on. I knew, other pilots didn't, I knew as an auxiliary I was going back to my old fight squad. So I knew I was going to go into fighters. So my whole thought was to get this flying training over and join my old squadron. So I suppose I was highly motivated, and even if I may not have been an outstanding night, my flying at night may not have been outstanding, nevertheless, I was determined that I'd be successful at it. But it doesn't stick in my mind that, you know, I was doing anything profound at the time.
You also were introduced to formation flying there, were you not?
Yeah, but very, very limited. In fact, to my knowledge, we only did formation flying once.
Was there any reason for that? Because I would have thought that was quite an important form of part of your training at that period of the war.
Well, I'm certain the problem was that all instructors were doing whatever stage they were up to instructing, and no one wanted to sort of, there wasn't time to teach formation flying. There was too many other things to get through.
Could you explain to me, really, with the formation? Because obviously a number of the photographs that you took prior to the war show the aircraft flying in formation. How important was formation flying pre-war and at the early stages of the war?
Though instruction on formation flying away from operational units was virtually nil, formation flying based on the RAF pre-war standards was a vital part of a pilot being capable to be in a unit.
Why was that?
Only because the pre-war RAF had placed so much stress on formation flying being an essential part of battle training.
Was there any background, really, why they would have suggested that formation flying was?
I think, from a discipline point of view. In other words, not a carefree, happy bunch. We're tight, we formate tight and we're under control.
So operating as a unit rather than individuals.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
With your training here, did you sit any form of written examination or did you take any flight examinations?
In regard to flying, we always had a flying test by the chief flying instructor or someone like that. Sometime at stages during the course. While this was going on, we were doing ground courses on all the subjects that we'd done at the earlier flying school. All the same subjects, except this time it took in gunnery, in that we were taught, because the aircraft they had in the next stage of my flying at Lavington, they had two Vickers guns in the cockpit, and what you learn to dismantle and put together blind a Vickers machine gun. So that was one of the most useless things I've ever done, but I I used to be able to recite it off like poetry, how to put a Vickers gun together, but that's gone a long way back.
Did you actually have any practice gunnery at all at that stage?
When we got... Where are we? When I got my wings on the 8th of June 1940, from a humble LAC, I became a sergeant. And then we moved on to another section of it, Hull Abington, which we did formation flying, cross countries, night flying.
Before I ask you about them, how did you feel when you'd attained the rank of sergeant?
Sir?
How did you feel when you'd attained the rank of sergeant and got your wings? What was your...
You know, from the out of the war to the stage I'm at now, discussing, obviously I'd grown up a lot. And the thought of being commissioned had never even entered my head. It was sort of another world. But by this time now, on the course with me would have been a lot of youth under training officer pilots. We weren't all sergeants, and there was I think four of us LACs. But I got to know all this new bunch of people, and you may think it relevant, and we can cut you if you don't think it relevant. I always remember meeting a man called Winnie, a very nice fellow, very polished. And he mentioned Charterhouse to me. And I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Of course, it was his school. And he was staggered that I'd never heard of Charterhouse. That was one of the well-known public schools, we all know. And it gradually sunk in, you know, there was sort of another world out there which I knew nothing about. And then I'll add another point onto it. As regards being a pilot there, due to my past experience, though I'm saying it myself, I was probably one of the best pilots there. They also trained people on Avros there, twins, but in the fighter section, I was probably one of the best pilots there. Something, I'll make a figure, six of us were chosen to go and have an interview with the CO. I'll say six, I can't remember, maybe ten or so. Anyway, the others were interviewed. And I was still waiting. And anyway, I don't know, I knocked on the door of the adjutant's office or something there, or something. And cut a long story short, they were being interviewed for commissions to finish the rest of the training as with a white things on their shoulders, you see. And I hadn't even been interviewed. And all I can say, basically, because I'd left school at 14.
I was going to say, it seems to indicate that a certain background was still required even at that early stage.
Very much so. That's at this stage. So it was at that stage I started, you know, started feeling that, knowing that there was this thing. I started to realise that, you know, there's universities, there's grammar schools, there was background, were playing a part in, you know, for instance, I had a sergeant instructor. Well, all the UT officers had officer instructors, they would get that sort of thing. And I hadn't been aware of it until I went to Lavington at all. It never rung a bell with me. Probably I was dim, I didn't.
Well, it sounds like it was very different, obviously, from the Auxiliary Air Force, where there was almost very distinct levels.
Oh, a distinct level, yeah.
But you'd had quite a number of hours flying experience, and that sounds stranger in that environment, because yeah. you were more experienced than other people.
Yeah, I was more experienced than most of them, I should think.
But that still was the case with...
Yeah, that's how it is.
But how did you personally feel when you got your... You became a sergeant? Did you feel...
Oh, related? When I was promoted to sergeant, I mean... Oh, I was delighted. I thought it was fantastic. And, of course, to put your wings up, your brevet, wait. So to get stripes and a wing all in the same day was, you know, that's heaven.
And you said you went on to some more advanced flying after that period when you
yes,
became a flight.
Which was a lot of formation flying.
Could you tell me of the formations that you flew in at that point?
Well, normally it was only two aircraft you were practicing. You know, the one, and you took turns in doing whatever you were doing, and you were just flying close on port and close on starboard. Sometimes a little bit of stern, but I don't think they liked that because they couldn't see what you were up to. But you never got big formations. It was just learning how to fly next to another airplane. I think sometimes we had threes, but not very frequently, I don't think.
Is there anything that you have to take into account when you're flying that close to another aircraft?
Well, the idea was to fly as close as possible. Now then, that depended on your instructor, and sometimes you were told you're flying too close, pull out a bit, and sometimes you were told to drop back, sometimes you're too far back, you must be forward, he can't see you. But if you like formation flying, and I should enjoy it immensely, I'm not saying with biplanes, but later with things like Spitfires, I could tap somebody else's wing with fun, you know, just let them know I was still there. I mean, basically, within the rules of the book that were laid at the time, I got as close as I possibly could.
Could I ask you, you've said, obviously, you had a number of hours with the flying, but in your opinion, did you feel a competent, good pilot at this stage?
I felt as good as anybody there.
Were there people who were... in your eyes, and maybe other trainees who were not quite coming up to the standard, would you say, of just not getting the hang of
yes, well, flying? I can't remember after this time, but right through my RF career, for odd reasons and another, people disappeared.
Would that be the process? They would literally just not be there.
They'd be there one day and they're gone the next. And because there was some activity, you wouldn't have noticed probably for a fortnight that they weren't around.
Am I right in thinking they needed formation flying, some more night flying?
Yes.
Was there anything else?
That's a cheek of the map. Yeah. Oh, I did. We flew Audaxes there, which are just another variation of the hart and the hind. And we did dive bombing with 10-pound bombs, smoke bombs.
Could you explain to me how you did that?
there was a white target on the ground, and we flew over it at a specified height, I can't remember. Then you did a wing over and dive down and release the bomb at, don't ask me what height, probably about 500 feet, and then you pulled up and hoped to hit the white target. Yes.
How did you do on that?
Once I did it without any bombs with no structure, and then I did it with four bombs on my own.
How did you do with the bombing?
It doesn't say.
Can I ask a little bit about the, obviously within these training schools where you were, a little bit about the social life you had with your kind of fellow recruits?
Do you want me to go back?
Yeah, if you take it back a little bit to the other ones as well.
Well, if I go back to Woodley, near Reading. Living in this, what was a private house, and having batmen, it was very comfortable, very nice, food was good. And so, life was quite pleasant. But the work intensity built up very, very quickly. So, whereas, let's say, in the early days we got there, we had Saturday and Sunday off, that started disappearing. And our social life was fairly limited. Didn't do a lot at all. We certainly didn't go out to pubs drinking. But I remember the factory that was Miles' factory that made the aircraft, the Magister. They had a factory party. We went to that. I remember that. We went to the cinema occasionally. But it was remember the war started, all you were really interested in was getting over that flying course. That was the only thing that was interested. Now I remember one of our group was married, and I remember he had a car, he's a capitalist. He used to drive away at weekends to go and see his wife. So we probably had most weekends, or the Sunday free anyway, or Saturday afternoon. But there wasn't a lot of social activity. At Hallamington, there was none.
What was the reason for that?
The intensity of the work, the studying. We lived in married quarters. We were billeted in old married quarters. And we always had sort of, from the ground school, we always had sort of homework to do and revision to do. And I'd tell you one for sort of how it was run. the reflection on how it's run. I had one very good friend called Rutherford, came from Leeds. He was an auxiliary LAC like myself. And we're on night flying. And we walked into a nearby shop, to a nearby shop, which is probably 15 minutes walk away. And I don't know what we went to buy him toffees, I suppose. And we walked back in. And oddly enough, I don't know why it's, whether I said something or something, I don't know. And I was seen, or it was reported. And I was marched in front of a flight lieutenant for going out of bounds of the camp during hours. Well, remember, it was as with night flying thing, and it was anyway. And once again, I was confined to camp. I can't remember how long for this. I think it was only something like 10 days. But the worst part of it was I had to report to the guard room if we went on night flying at, say, 6 o'clock in the evening, all polished and things like that. Then at something like 7:30, I had to report to the duty officer at the officer's mess. Now, the point of that was, you went there, and you were a bloody annoyance, and to bother with you. So the practice was to give you a good tearing off. So you went to the officer's mess every night, to be torn up first, to be stripped, disturbing his meal, doing it. At this stage, those with the red thing had moved to the officer's mess, moved away from us, and you could see the difference between we were living in married quarters and eating in the airman's mess, and there was the officer's mess. With people who are flying with you, living a different life almost, you see.
It sounds like it must have been quite a strange existence you had there.
Yeah.
The contrast between the two.
Two, yeah.
And the discipline was quite strict.
Oh, very, very strict, yes, yes.
Because obviously later on you were an officer.
Yes, I am.
So how do you feel now about how you were treated as an LAC?
It was... What was... accepted, and what, in a way, well, you'd been conditioned into, even before the war, you know, it was, I had no grievance. I mean, I had bellyaches over years about one or two things, you see, but that's another story, that come later if you ever get to that. At that time, no, I had no complaints about being a sergeant and someone else being an officer, not at that stage.
It sounds like you accepted, there was an acceptance of discipline within
Oh, yes.
Was that, I mean, I don't know how much contact you would have had with the other services, but was that specifically an RAF thing?
No, I think, depending where you were in the circumstances, discipline was, you know, quite firm, you know.
And obviously, as I say, later on you became a sergeant and then an officer for this period. Would there have been a marked contrast in how you were treated by the time you got to the officer stage?
Oh, yes, completely. The gap was still there. But I'll probably talk about that later because I didn't like it.